in a matter of time. After all is said and done, keep in your mind, you will find a satisfaction. Then you will see what a little effort can bring. It can fill your world with love and blessings. You gotta go all the way. That's how you grow.
You are listening to 89.5 KPOO San Francisco, and welcome to Reality Sandwich, where every Thursday at noon we serve up a palatable taste of the truth on topics of the mind, body, spirit, community, economy, and our environment, all six areas of the Healthful Living Model, and you can read more about that at healthfulliving.org. My name is Martin Matthews. I'm a certified clinical and medical hypnotherapist and Healthful Living advocate with Healthful Living. And you can get this show later on and all shows at realitysandwichradio.com. Today we're going to be talking about more delving into my favorite subject, the nature of reality. And as we all know, and we talk about week after week here, reality is changing. Things are shifting in our world, in our environment, really in all aspects of life. There's a lot of change afoot. And I find myself in conversations with people, friends, colleagues, professionals, many of whom individually are seeking change themselves. It's one thing that we're looking around in the outside world and saying, boy, things are changing, but internally things are changing as well. People seem to be seeking more meaning is a word that comes to me, something different, to use a generic term, more alignment with what moves them. And historically, I mean, we have to be honest, doing your own thing is a rarity. Most of us end up in patterns and following things based on what we've learned will get us the goodies or the money or the things that we need to sustain ourselves and to survive. And it doesn't always serve us. And at some point, we reach a point in our lives where we look back and we say, well, boy, what was the real meaning of that? Seeking meaning is a natural human phenomena, I believe. We always want to feel good ultimately, but being in charge of feeling good is not something that we have that much experience with, because we're generally just run away with what's going on. So therefore, today on the show, we're going to be speaking about career change, life change, aligning with your passion in some regard. I have with me a few different guests. To my left is Susan Bernstein. She has been on the show before. She is the owner and director of Work From Within, and she is a career and transition coach. She specializes in helping people realign their lives and their careers with what moves them inside for greater happiness and success in all aspects of life. She has a background in management consulting and marketing and a whole host of other things that we'll learn about in just a few moments. And then I've invited two people who themselves are experiencing change from a couple different walks that I've noticed. One of them is Ben Varvel. He's here. Ben has found himself on the fast track, or the escalator, so to speak, of the corporate world, and then just decided to step back and halt it and give it some rethinking. And we'll hear his story. I also have in the studio David Matthews, and he's one of another category of folks who, in the past few years, has found that his career of 10, 12 years, things have shifted in the marketplace, there wasn't quite a need for it, and he's now been going through some exploration, pursuing some of his own interests, looking at a few different things, and is also in that phase of, you know, redirecting and refocusing and trying to find what's really going to be, you know, move him and be his passion in life. So let's just start this discussion. I'd like to get Susan's opinion here on, because this is, you had a career before you decided to make your career helping others with their career.
Exactly, yeah.
So what have you been seeing in the world that's changing in the marketplace, in our society, culture, that's shifting, that more people are looking inwards?
Well, I'll say that, you know, this, I think, two ways of looking at it. One is from what's satisfying, and one was from what's unsatisfying. I want to start actually with what's unsatisfying to people, dissatisfying to them. Mm-hmm. In many ways, people are getting, more and more people are experiencing discomfort with the ways that corporations are asking them to work. So many people work in corporations, and you know, there's more and more demands on people, so much so that you know they can feel that their life has been invaded. There are time pressures. There are constraints of projects that people work on for a long time, and then they get pulled because of changes in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of macroeconomic trends that are driving corporations to have to work people harder. And people are stopping and saying, is this really worth it? You know, I may be earning a six-figure salary, but do I even have the time to go spend that? I had that experience myself when I was working in management consulting. I was making a lot of money, and I had a ton of frequent flyer miles, but where did I even have the time to go use those frequent flyer miles? I would wind up exhausted, and I see a lot of people who say, I'm exhausted, I'm burned out. And on the flip side of that is the things that people are moving. So that's what people are moving away from. I hear more people in their dissatisfaction, in those things that are draining them, moving away from. And then there's the what we're moving towards. And in many ways, what I see is that, you know, if you think about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, at the base of that hierarchy of needs are the very basics. We need a roof over our head. We need food to eat. We need a shelter. You know, we need to stay warm. And most of us in our society, and I can't say that this is true for everyone, but certainly people who are middle and upper class have those things. And now what we're doing is moving up Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Well, at the top of that is meaning. We're really looking for that meaning. So more and more people are doing that because the basics are covered and we're moving up the pyramid. And I also see that another piece of what's going on is people are saying, you know, what's really precious to me is connections with other people. What's really precious to me is to be able to do the things I care about, to have time for my hobbies, to have time for the people in my life. And so what people are recognizing is that there are many, many accoutrements to life, you know, the fancy car, the more fancy clothes, you know, whatever the thing that they go and shop for, that they're really recognizing, this isn't what it is. I'm not really looking for this. And so what they're doing is they're simplifying their lives. So we're seeing a lot more of people moving into, there's a whole movement around simplicity. And there are simplicity circles that people go into. So they're saying, people are saying to themselves, maybe if I may have a less complicated life, I have greater freedom. I may not have the money, but they're making that trade-off. Even when it's scary, they're saying something has become so worth it in my own personal equation that having freedom, that having choice is more important to me than just having what I think is the base level of security. Does mm-hmm. that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's shifts going on in our environment, in the external world, getting a bit more invasive. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's serving to trigger what I think is also naturally emerging inside, which is our own inner desire for meaning and greater connectedness to what it is that we do with our time and where we put our energy. I mean, certainly we've talked a bit about in the past the onslaught of corporate America and mm-hmm. sort of the very, very Theory X kind of thinking about people. Mm-hmm. Theory X thinking essentially being that people are worker bees and you tell them what to do and you pay them what you feel is right and they'll do what you need them to do. Mm-hmm. The Theory Y thinking from leadership management perspective looks at people in a very different perspective and looks at Maslow and looks at what motivates people. How do we create a system that helps people to thrive and be happy mm-hmm. with what moves them so that then collectively we'll all be thriving and be happy together, which is a radically different paradigm.
Yes.
A radically different paradigm, which I believe is emerging unavoidably mm-hmm. within humanity.
Well, you used to see, you know, I think there's pieces of outgrowth of the Industrial Revolution that are not yet finished working their way out of our economy. So what you would see in the 18th, 19th, early 20th century was factory work where what was trying to happen in Taylorism and other forms of scientifically managing processes was we were stripping out time from the equation. How can we get this piecemeal work done faster and faster and faster? And it took the worker out of, you know, it took out of the worker the meaning, the connection with what they were making, because it's all about let's get it done faster, let's get it done faster, let's be more and more efficient, mm-hmm. but there's less connection. Well, what's unfortunate is that even now in the way that we work, and where more people are knowledge workers, meaning that they're not working with the tangible product, but they're doing things like I did, management consulting or marketing, that are more intangible, more about ideas than about physical product. But even so, there's the enormous drive for efficiency. We outsource the pieces that, you know, we can, so that we can be more and more efficient in what we do. But we, again, strip people away from the meaning, and we find people stripped away from the meaning because of technology, unfortunately, as well. You know, technology is like a friend. You know, with our friends, we take the good with the bad. You know, our friends aren't all perfect. We know they've got their little flaws and their quirks, and we take that with all the good of them. Well, technology has the same thing. Email has the propensity to let us get a lot done, but mm-hmm. it can also keep us online all day. We can be on our BlackBerry and our thumbs ache at the end of the day because we're constantly connected.
Right.
And we're not really connecting with another human being. We're connecting with the idea there. And so what happens is we become, you know, if you will, walking lollipops, big, big head, not much going on in our bodies, and we become cut off from what we're really feeling. And that's where, you know, for me, part of helping people reconnect is work from within. It's within the whole body and really re-sensing, again, what's important to us.
Right.
I'd like to add something to that, and that is, you know, the sense of feeling like you have to be okay with a certain situation. The classic good news, bad news situation is this. Okay, the bad news is we have to lay off 20 employees. The good news is you get to keep your job, but then the bad news is you have to do their jobs too.
Mm.
So you keep your job, but now you have to do not only your job, but the job of the three or four other people that got laid off. And you can't complain about it because you're lucky to have the job.
Right.
And so you internalize all these feelings that you have that you're unsatisfied with the situation, and you don't want to speak up because you could be the next one to be laid off, or they could outsource your job to India tomorrow. And so you put up with these things because you are conditioned to think, I got to be happy with what I have.
Right.
So you don't. So you internalize it. You don't complain about it.
Let's ask Ben. Ben, you were on, I heard you speak a few weeks ago, I think you talked about it as an escalator, and was just moving along and kind of saw it going. And so what's your story, and what do you think about some of the things that Susan was saying about the shifting environment?
It's interesting talking about listening to Susan talk, because I think she's got a lot more, maybe a doctoral type analysis of what I've done, and my understanding is very, very simple, just from my own personal experience. I think it's got a pretty similar upbringing from a lot of middle America. I had two loving parents. I went to college because that was what I was supposed to do. After that, I graduated, and, you know, I said, you know, what am I supposed to do now? And they said, well, you've got an engineering degree, and you should become an engineer. And I said, well, I didn't really want to do that, and so I became engineering sales. And again, this is all those things that I was supposed to do. And so I went out, and all I know how to do is to work hard and to focus on what I was doing. And so I was actually quite good at it. And I was climbing the ladder. I was 26 years old, making six figures, which by many of society's standards, I'm, you know, top 5%. And all these different things, I'm extremely successful. I have grandparents pulling me aside at family events and saying, you know, I love you, but I'm also extremely proud of you. I mean, these are things that, you know, by all of American, you know, I'm almost at the white picket fence at this point. But then I really started looking forward, and I said, you know, what's going to happen in 20 years? I'm going to be the guy driving the real fancy car in the city. I'm going to be the guy with the nice house in the woods. But then there's a cost to that, and the cost to that was I'm going to be traveling 2-3 weeks a year. I'm not going to be close with my family. I'm going to miss the baseball games. My kids are going to see me whenever I come home. I can give them presents when I come, you know, from the airports, but I'm not really connecting with them. And I started looking at what do I truly want for myself. And I realized that every day that I'm continuing along this path, this escalator, no matter how fast it's going, I mean, the destination isn't what I wanted. And so I had to sit back and, you know, for about a year I started asking myself, you know, what do I really want to do? I mean, these 12 hours I'm working every single day, what would I rather be doing with this 12 hours so that I could have, I guess, more meaning, like Susan was saying, or also get something closer to maybe what I truly wanted? And, you know, I kept looking for it for a year or so. I said, well, maybe I can break off and start doing something that maybe I could enjoy. You know, I'll talk to my friends about, you know, opening a bar or starting a restaurant or something where I can be more interactive with the people that I like and things like that. And it was always, well, what do I want to do for work? And it got so frustrated that after a year of continually looking for it, even though it was successful at what I was doing, I decided I've got to quit my job or I'm never going to find what I wanted. And so as soon as I quit my job, a very interesting thing happened is I didn't have to wake up early and go to work every day. I didn't have to do all these different things that are required by a job. And the question that was always before is, what do I want to do while I'm working, became, well, what kind of lifestyle do I want? And that was a huge, that, it seems obvious now, what kind of lifestyle do I want? But in that working environment, I never had the opportunity to ask that. And so now I'm thinking, well, what kind of lifestyle do I want? It's like, well, one, I don't want work to be my number one. And that was the biggest transition for me. It's just, and it was so, it's so obvious now, but when I was in that, I knew that little box I was in. It was like work was number one, and you sleep and you eat when you have time, typically in my car. And then, so now I've got a whole new view of what do I want to do. And so I don't know what it is yet. I've got some things I'm looking into doing. Maybe Susan can help me out later with that. It sounds like that's her expertise. But at this point, I'm still hunting, but I've got a whole new perspective that I'm excited about. So that's kind of my story right now.
So money does not equal meaning.
Is what I'm finding, yes. Although I think that will change as I continually spend my money that I've got saved up in this unemployment period. So.
Right, but it sounds like just the inquiry is really, really powerful. And whether it's about career or health or really any walk of life, that asking oneself that inner question of what do I want? Yeah, just starting in that. What do I want? How do I want this to be? How do I want to be involved in what's being created in my own life? It's very easy to get stuck in a pattern of, David said it before, the have-tos, right? I have to get up. I have to do this. Have to. I mean, what could make one feel more less empowered or disempowered than to have a bunch of have-tos all the time?
Yeah.
You know? Myself and Julie, we work for ourselves, but we find ourselves often still using that term, have to. I have to do this, have to that in the morning. Well, sure, you kind of really sort of can say you have to because you made a commitment to somebody to do something at a certain time, but you're your own boss, and you know immediately the implication of if you don't do it, it's your choice. And just that position is so much more empowering than acting out of fear that someone else is going to yell at you or threaten you or, you know. I get very esoteric on this subject, and I kind of see it all as essentially kind of a withdrawal of love. I'm not going to like you. I'm going to separate from you. I'm going to abandon you. You know, all these kind of fears that we all have inside from our childhood, right? You're not going to be accepted. You're not going to be liked. You're not going to be taken care of. You're not going to be able to survive. I mean, all these things play out at such different levels that I think that we're getting our inner something's just stirred up by the change in our environment that's lessening our ability to just take it.
There's something, Martin, in what you're saying that, Martin, it's so interesting, this whole thing we're all talking about shoulds and supposed tos and ought tos. And, you know, the way that I look at it, one way to look at it is from, I was saying this to you guys before we went on the air, this whole piece from Gestalt psychology that we introject, we take in an idea and we swallow it whole. Well, the idea of shoulds comes to us, my gosh, how early does that happen in school that we get told, you know, I watched it with little five-year-olds in kindergarten, you should sit down now, you should behave yourself. And like, you know, five-year-olds full of bouncy, happy energy and, you know, to sit that kid down at a chair for over an hour is torture to the kid. But we learn to take that in, and we learn to take in, you know, in corporations to sit for hours on end staring at a computer screen under fluorescent lights in you know, recycled air. We learn to take that in, and we're very adaptable creatures. And in some respects, that's a great thing. But in others, we take in so many ideas that we don't stop and question. And so we are faced with that piece of, you know, the supposed tos. And one of the healthiest things I think we can do is to start writing down or keeping track of where are our supposed tos. Because really what I believe they are is there are ways that we've learned to distrust our own impulses, our own instinct, that feeling. So, you know, when you own your own business, you can listen to your instinct more. You know, you can say, I don't feel like doing this right now. And you can ask yourself, okay, am I just procrastinating, for example? But you can also say, does this feel right? And that was one of the biggest things that happened for me in getting away from my management consulting and marketing background and saying, I need some space away from this to feel myself again. And that's been what I think is so brilliant. You know, the courage that you took to say, I'm not doing this job anymore and I'm taking the time for myself. So you can feel yourself again. So you can know in the morning, when do I want to wake up? Do I want to stay up until 2 in the morning? Because that's, you know, my most creative time, for example. And I'm not going to wake up until, you know, 10 in the morning. Whatever, to set your own, to find your own impulse, your own rhythm again.
Right, yeah.
You know, one of my favorite quotes from Saturday Night Live and Stuart Smalley was he used to say, "I'm shooting all over myself," which is a great way to say it. And the thing also about that is every birthday that you have, you play that game with yourself. Okay, I'm 40 years old now. I should be making X amount of money. I should be driving this kind of car. I should be married. I should have a kid. I should do this. I should do that. And it's this game that we play with ourselves every time we have a birthday, or even if, especially if it's a milestone birthday like 40 mm-hmm. or 50, and we say to ourselves, where should I be at this stage of my life? So, you know.
Well, once you orient yourself to somebody else's objective for you, then you cut off your ability to be fully empowered. And that doesn't mean that I'm saying to everyone out there, you're disempowered. But what I'm saying is that there's a perspective. Doesn't matter whether you have a huge, huge job or whether you're, you know, flipping burgers, whatever it is. Because the flipping burgers thing, it can simply be seen as your choice to engage in that, and what you're getting for it is what you're getting for it. I mean, it's just a matter of how you look at it. If you feel, I feel as victimization so often is really a choice of how we look at things. I mean, everything is how we look at things, ultimately. And the point here is simply that once we get oriented that what we're doing is because of something or somebody outside of us, then we are just completely abdicating to the whim of somebody else. We've given our buttons outside of ourselves, that somebody else can push these buttons or control these buttons that then determine the most important thing, which is how we feel. And when somebody else does something or something else does something that makes us feel crappy, we sometimes inadvertently reinforce ourselves positively, because then we go, I knew it. I knew I have no control. I knew that outside system was going to do something to me and make me feel bad. And so we talk ourselves into helplessness.
On the other side of that question, it's always very obvious when you're doing things because you're supposed to. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I did is I realized, you know what, I'm doing this job and I'm doing all of these things because this is what I'm supposed to do. And before I knew what I wanted to do, I just said, you know what, I'm not going to do that anymore. But then the next question to people that make this decision, and I happened to make my decision 3 weeks ago, and the question I always ask myself, well, what do I want to do? And I don't know how to answer that. I don't know. And so rather than say, I don't want to accept your direction, I want my own direction. But then we've been doing somebody else's direction for so long, we don't know what our own direction is.
Sure.
So maybe, Susan, you could answer a question. How would you go about finding out your own direction?
Well, I think one of the things is also not to put the whole big pressure on yourself. What do I want to do? And I think part of it is also asking, who do I want to be in the world? How do I want to come across in the world? What values are important to me? What do I want to express? One of the most important values to me is teaching. So, you know, being invited to be on your radio show, Martin, is like a joy. I feel it in my heart. I love to teach. I love to share this perspective. I care deeply about sharing with people, hey, wake up. You get to choose your life. So I think part of it is in choosing who you want to be, how you want to show up in the world, rather than, again, I think it's a lot of pressure. What do I want to do is can be a huge burden. And I think part of it is, you know, I talk a lot about instincts and impulses, listening on the inside about whether the questions you're asking yourself open you up and are expansive, or whether they shut you down and feel constrictive. So, you know, even when you say the question about what do I want to do, you know, ask yourself, does it feel heavy? And is there a way you can lighten up that question? Another thing that I recommend is to start with, you know, sometimes we're so, and this happens a lot with people who I work with who are still in a job that they're not finding gives them fulfillment, that they're frustrated with, is to write down all the things that are frustrating. You know, to write down, you know, I have a boss who screams at me. I'm expected to work, it feels like 24/7. You know, I don't like the physical environment I'm working, whatever it might be. To write those things down, those are, as I look at it, those are drains in our life. And what we want to do is transform those into gains. So, you know, what have been, in your world, Ben, what have been the things that, you know, really sucked out your energy, that drained you? And then what are the things also where are your gains? What did you enjoy? What has been in your life, and not just in your work, but in your life, really life-giving to you, gives you back more energy than what you put into it? And the equation, if I go back to, I mean, there's been a benefit to having gone to business school and working in the corporate world that, you know, there are some perspectives that I've taken. One of those, when I started looking at return on investment, what's the return on the time we spend that's a little crass to look at it from such a monetary perspective. But if you look at the, if you set the intention for yourself of maximizing your return on life energy, one of the ways to look at that is to say, okay, I want to spend each day in the things that to maximize as much as I can the things that give me back more than I put into them. And to take and to take out the things, and you're doing that in an enormous way by stepping away from what had been draining you. You know, as you start to do that, like where am I doing the things that really feed me? And one of the ways to look at that return on life energy is, it's also an acronym and it spells the word role. So what if your role in the world is maximizing your own life energy? What I find is that my own experience with my clients and my own myself has been that when I'm doing more of what feeds me, you know, if I stand away from it and I don't immediately go, okay, but is it bringing me money? If I don't instantaneously jump on that and I just let myself enjoy, I find I have more energy and things, it's more like attracting things to me rather than me having to go out and go on the hunt for. And what I find is that the money follows. You know, there's a social entrepreneur and philanthropist, Lynn Twist, who says, what we appreciate appreciates. And what she means by that is that the things we care about and hold dear to ourselves, if we put more and more into that, that naturally invests. So, you know, I didn't know what I was doing when I started this business, Work From Within. I mean, I had some sense and some intention, but it's been more about following where my love and my interest is and what I care about. And I find naturally that, yeah, there's some ebb and flow and some tides, and yes, there are months that are better than others financially, but overall, the trend is upward because that's where I'm going too. So my invitation to you, Ben, is really to invest your day with what you care about, what brings back to you, and take out, you know, systematically start looking at where the shoulds are or the things that you do to yourself that, you know, give yourself a break and forgive yourself for them. But, you know, spending more and more of your time doing what you love, what you care about. And it sounds like you still have some savings that you can do that with. And you can always do, you know, I'm always telling people, you can go get a subsistence job. You can go do temp work. You can do things if you're needing to fill in, if you're really needing to subsidize your income. You can go do that.
Right. And that's what you've said there is similar to what I've done for myself. I've just gone head first into the things that I do enjoy doing, mm-hmm. and gotten more involved in the things I already do enjoy doing. I kind of allowed myself to say yes to the dreams I've always had. Like, I've always enjoyed doing these triathlons, and I've never really been able to say, yes, I want to do all these things, because a lot of it takes, you know, almost full-time training. Mm-hmm. And so with this time off, I've always wanted to do guitar lessons. I've always wanted to do these different things. And so I've said yes, and, you know, I signed up for all these things, and now I picked up a job at the local sports basement doing working in the triathlon department, just picking up, you know, knowledge in there and just trying to get more involved. And I'm signed up for a few triathlons in the future, and I'm training, and I'm on a team doing these things, and it's more involved than I could have ever been before. And I realize I'm never going to make money doing these things, but it's really shaping more of a lifestyle of what I'm looking for, as I was yes. talking about before. And I'm also finding different things, like guitar. I'm losing interest so quickly in that. And so it's something I've always wanted to try, but I'm trying it. And yeah. so now I'm realizing, yeah, you know what, it didn't work out. So whatever, it's going back to the attic. It's been there, you know, forever, and it's going right back, but whatever. But that's one of the things I've always been doing. So that's kind of the path I'm going, and it's developing a lifestyle that I want to do. And mm-hmm. at some point, I'm going to have to figure out, how am I going to pay the bills doing that lifestyle? And hopefully that comes the next few months or so.
Well, can I just jump on this for a second?
Sure.
Two pieces. One is, you said that you allowed yourself to do this change, and I don't know that you have to figure out where the income is going to come from. Part of it can be an allowing that, and there's just one little piece I picked up in what you said. You know, this is never going to make me money. All right, maybe you're never going to make money being the number one triathlon star. I don't know. I mean, I don't know your running. I've never watched you run or swim.
Something spectacular.
So maybe you're not going to make money as the champion in that, but maybe there's something in that industry or something related to it. So I just watch out for the nevers.
Right.
You know, we do that to ourselves. You know, it's okay.
Or it could be somebody you meet through these experiences.
Absolutely.
I mean, what I'm hearing is, you're designing your experience. You're designing what you want to be doing with your time. And just putting yourself into that process on a daily basis is just opens up a whole different world of attraction to you.
I had a very similar experience to Ben, except that my experience was over 5 years ago. And I had a corporate job. I was an account supervisor at an advertising agency working on a major automotive account, and was making good money, and I had, you know, a big house up in the hills with a very big mortgage payment. One of the first things I did was I reduced my monthly nut as low as I could get it. I sold my car, bought a cheap used car, sold the house, got into a smaller place that was much more affordable in rent. That freed me up to be able to do other things that I really enjoyed. Now, my passion has been music. I've been playing blues harmonica since 1982. Didn't get to play enough for me, so I decided to start a blues band and see if I could. That really is my passion. Now, I haven't been able to make a living from that yet, but I have been able to devote the time to it, and it's been very satisfying for me. The greatest thrill in the world is to be up on stage playing to a crowd and being, you know, with the musicians up there. And there will be ways to make that work. I'm currently working with some other people to try to get some corporate events and you know, maybe there might be a way to make money at it. My advice to Ben is just that, you know, don't feel like you have to put a 3-month or 4-month deadline on this. You know, depending on what your financial situation is, you may have a little bit more time. I pick up odd jobs here and there just to keep the money coming in to you know, keep my head above water. But to be honest, I am so much happier now than I was when I was making, you know, $95,000 a year. So.
Well, I'm getting a sense that, if I can speak for Ben, well, certainly that he's getting a lot of insight here, and that I can't imagine. He's going to be so much more conscious. That's what anybody listening now about going back to something that doesn't feel good, and that no matter what happens, whether he goes back to a job, who knows what's going to happen in the future? Nobody knows. But the theme here is about, you know, what feels right or feels good to you, and how much more you're empowering your choice to be involved in that, and to create something that feels good to you on a daily basis.
One other thing I'd like to add as well, in that same sense what you were saying earlier, just now, I guess, I heard of a bit of advice that was had a big impact on me, that it made me realize that it's not the people that are so miserable at work that need to make the changes. That's when it's easy. You feel like you have no choice but to make a change. It's the people that might be happy but just never take the time to self-evaluate. And I guess the advice I was given was, how did it go? It went... The only reason people will ever make a change in their life is if they're so miserable they feel like they have to, or if they'd step back and make a conscious decision to make a change. Mm-hmm. And so, by definition, if you're not entirely miserable and you never take the time to evaluate, you'll never make a change.
Right.
And so it's just – I had to sit back and I said, well, you know, what's it going to take to actually evaluate where I'm at? And I decided that even though I was happy at work, you know, the filtered air and the lights and the sitting behind a desk in front of a computer, it didn't bother me. It went right over my – I'm not affected by those things. But I decided, you know what, I want to reevaluate, and decided that that's not where I wanted to go. I wanted to change my path. So maybe people that are listening, even if you're not miserable, it's always worth evaluating what you're doing.
Well, tolerating sucks. You know, it really does. We tend to often do it in relationships, whether it's with another person or a company. You know, and once you start tolerating, you're swallowing something, getting back to our earlier point, that just doesn't taste good, and you're just dealing with it, and it's just really crappy. I wanted to ask Susan a little bit about, because not everybody out there who's resonating with this message or feeling something inside that's not quite right in their lives or their work has necessarily the opportunity to just quit their job, you know, or have savings built up. So there's people listening, I'm sure, that are saying, well, yeah, it's easy for you because you can just quit your job, and I'm just stuck in the situation, and, you know, I've got 47 reasons to substantiate why I am, in fact, a victim and have no control, no choice. What kind of insights or thoughts can we share with some of those folks?
Well, I would first start with, you know, are those kind of people actually feeling enough that says, okay, I got to switch this. I can't. I need to make a change. And I think it's holding the intention, first of all, that they can make that change. I think another thing to do is to actually make a list of those reasons. Why isn't this going to work out? And to really sit and look at the list. And one of the ways that I tell my clients to do that is make a list, sit down and set aside an hour to make that list of all the reasons why you can't change. And then take that list and put it, fold it up and put it in an envelope. And then the next day, it's a 3-day ritual. Next day, you sit down, you look at the list and say, is there anything else that needs to be on this list? Is there any other reason why I can't do this change? And you put that on the list. And then you fold the letter up and you put it back in the envelope. And then the third day, you take the list out and you're like, okay, I'm going to be really meticulous here. Is there any other reason why I can't make this change? What else is impeding me? And you put that on the list. And then you take the letter, you put it in the envelope, and you burn it. I have watched that change lives. I have done it myself. My own coach suggested this to me with a slightly different problem. But there is something to burning away those fears. There's another thing about, you know, being on a triangle. I think you're talking a lot about being a victim. There's a triangle when you're on a victim. When you're a victim, there's three parts to the triangle. There's victim, villain, and hero. So who's your villain in your world? Who are you letting be the voice that stands over you? And in many cases, it's our parents. It's an old voice. We've let our organizations be that old voice. And who's the hero? Who are you waiting to come and rescue you? Well, the magic isn't getting off of the triangle to standing on your own and saying, I don't have to be the victim. I don't have to be the hero and go rescue everybody else either. And I don't have to be the villain and villainize everybody else here. It's like I get to go and blaze my own trail. So I think part of it also is in saying, okay, what are the doable things? And the biggest thing that I find holds people back is they think that the money is the problem. And I think part of it is in the equation of saying, what am I really trading off in terms of my time? If I make my time worth money to me, you know, I was working in a job probably like many of you guys, you know, 60, 80, 100 sometimes hours a week. Say, what is that worth? Where's the trade-off? What would I give for all those hours? I would not go back. I don't care how much money they pay me to do management consulting. I won't go do it again, not the way that that works, because it would be such a cost to me. So saying to yourself, all right, is there a way to reduce that world? So I went from being a management consultant working for clients to working internally inside the firm. And many people call that a cost center. I was a so-called burden to the firm. I think that's hysterical. But I took an internal job running training, a particular training organization. It took less hours. It was more fulfilling for me. And I said, okay, so, you know, it's not the prestige it used to be. It's not the salary increases it used to be. But it's worth it to me. So is there a way you can do the parts, carve out the parts of what you like and go do them at fewer hours a week? Either for your employer, you know, get up the courage to go ask your current employer. I'm watching one of my clients do that right now, saying, I need to go to 4 days a week. I need that fifth day a week for myself. Can you take a sabbatical? Have you saved up enough sick leave? I think the biggest part of the equation is this time and money and looking at that trade-off. I just want to share, there's a great book for that, Your Money or Your Life, is a great book for looking at that.
I'm glad you mentioned that about connecting with your employer, because this isn't always necessarily about, you know, quit your job, the corporation sucks. You know, it could also be about redesigning or rethinking what you're currently doing with your employer. You could be with a company for a certain period of time. I mean, this is kind of the whole internal career development conversation, right? And sort of the undertone here is our own personal empowerment about our role in the relationship. You know, if we're employed by a company, it's a relationship. You have a relationship with them. You have signed on to an agreement with them to give your time and your energy and your knowledge and your experience to their corporate effort for a certain amount of money and benefits. You know, there's a relationship that you're in, and no one likes to feel disempowered in that relationship, like you have no choice in it. Mm-hmm. So part of what's going on, right, as you were saying, and I've been hearing these stories, people redesigning their current work with their employer, looking at a different part of the company, because companies realize the value of the experience of their employees. They don't want people to just leave, right? Mm-hmm. So there is certainly, at least in decent companies, right, increasingly so today, an internal component around facilitating people's career development within the organization. So do you also do that kind of work and helping people to kind of be in that conversation and exploring where else they may want to go in that arena?
Yeah, absolutely. I know, I never know. I'm not a career psychic. I know somebody who calls herself a career psychic. I don't predict for people where they're going to go. But I often have clients who, when we start looking at where the drains and the gains are, it's often in, oh, you know, there's too many hours at this, or there's these parts of my job I don't like, but I love this part. Well, okay, how can you carve that out? How can you step up to the plate and not be a victim, but step up and say, you know, be courageous and say to your employer, you know, I really like this part and I'd really like to flesh it out and I have a vision for this. I'd like to do it. That's how I wound up doing training inside the consulting firm. I said, you know, here's what I really love about my job and here's the pieces I see. And they helped me craft something together because they saw it of to be of value. And so, yeah, I see that with some of my clients. And it's a wonderful surprise to me where, you know, they come in, I hate my company. And oh, wait, it's not really about that. It's about the components of the pieces, the elements that they're working on, and finding just that combination that they really want to do.
It's generally the relationship they don't like.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's the relationship, yeah. Sometimes it's the mm-hmm. people and, you know, can I work in a different group in the company? Can I work with different clients?
Right.
But getting conscious to what's working, what's not working. And you know, it doesn't always have to be that you leave the company to make it happen.
Right. So we've got about 10 minutes left, and we have our career coach transition expert here, and we've heard the stories of two different folks in the studio with me here. What kind of rapid-fire quick advice do you have for the two of them heading off now into their respective ongoing journeys of self-discovery and sorting out all this life and career stuff?
I think one of the most important things is to stay in touch with yourself. You know, whatever it takes to stay in touch with you and what's important to you, and to sift and sort that out from, again, where are those messages that you're internalizing from somewhere else? And to listen to the part of you that is a dream. You know, to literally, you know, I tell some of my clients where it makes sense, write down your dreams in the morning. And, you know, after a week, go back and look at what those dreams are telling you. If those were a message, what would they be saying to you? And to notice also where you are, again, the expansion, contraction, where are you contracting against something that's, you know, making you smaller, making your shoulders draw in and, you know, you feel all tight on the inside. And where are those places where you expand and start to notice those? And, you know, this is a little unconventional advice, but if you believe in a higher power, you believe in God, whatever it is, the universe, you know, praying for guidance. There's a book that's always influenced me, whether it's my career, my relationships, etc. And it's my way of giving away when I want to give friends, you know, if I wish I could give them some really big expensive gift and I can't, I give them Shakti Gawain's book, Creative Visualization. I think it's been out on the market now 25 years. She's mm-hmm. celebrating 25 mm-hmm. years on the market. It's this whole idea of how do you visualize what you want and using that the power of visualization. And I will never forget, I met her in college. And I went to her and I said, well, Shakti, this is all really nice. People are visualizing cars that they want and relationships that they want. But I don't know what I want. So I have a bigger problem than everybody else here. I made myself the total victim. And what she said to me is, no, all you have to do is make that your visualization, that ask, you know, ask for guidance about what you want. Oh, that's kind of simple. Ask to be guided. So, you know, I think there are many techniques, and so much of it is like what you're saying, Martin, is being in charge of your own process, that you get to guide it. We don't get to guide every single interaction and every single experience that happens in our day. But I think so many of us give away that power, and we can take it back and say, I get to choose the flavor and the tone and the lifestyle that I want. And it may not happen instantaneously overnight. But it's in the little choices that we make every day where we're listening to our impulses.
I'd just like to add something, and that is, you know, I think sometimes what happens is that when you work in a corporate environment, because middle managers and upper managers are always trying to put people where they think they're best, sometimes what they do is they define for you what they think you're good at.
Mm-hmm.
And my point is that we know internally, when you really think about it, what we're really good at. We know what our strengths are, what we excel at. And if you let somebody else define that for you, that can somehow throw off your own sense of what you think is your strength.
Right.
You know, somebody can say, you know what, you're a great writer, you need to do writing, and that's what you need to do. And you're saying, no, really, my strength is really in communicating, or my strength is in art, or my strength is in something else. So I think when you really think about it internally, if you just spend a few minutes thinking about it, I think we all know really what we're good at.
And also what we really like. You know, what part of my rub about what made it harder for me to leave the corporate world, or to leave particularly a piece of management consulting I was doing, is I was good at the things I was expected to do for clients, I just didn't really like it. You know, I had built up all this expertise in strategy consulting and in building complicated Excel spreadsheets for modeling financial change. And I thought, well, I may be good at it, but do I really love it? So I think it's marrying the strength, what you're good at, and what you love. You know, and many times people start with, I love this, but I don't have the expertise yet, but something's, you know, calling me to go check it out, and it may or may not be worth it. You know, you checked out Guitar Ben, and you're like, oh, it's going back in the attic. All right. But you gave yourself that chance to check it out. And I think that's, you know, I think life is all about exploration. And I think we so readily lose sight of that, especially when, you know, we're working for somebody else and we're exploring what they want us to explore. What about opening up and saying, you know, I'm on this planet for a reason. I have all this curiosity. Maybe that energy is worth following.
Ben, I thought it sounded like you were about to say something.
No, I was just agreeing on 100%. I think she took a lot of what I had to say and put it all together. You're right, the guitar is going back in the attic, but I've now eliminated that one. And the triathlon training is something I'm really starting to get excited about. And I'm taking all the things that I'm happy about in my past job and trying to formulate how I can plug those parts in with the lifestyle I'm looking for. And I'm coming up with some decent ideas and investigating them now. So we'll see. I don't know how it's going to turn out, but I've got some time left.
It's really about being in the inquiry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think all of life is an inquiry. You know, you may get to what that next job is, but my guess is you're not going to have it forever. And that part of your ability to go through this exploration will serve you your whole life. All of our life, we're making choices. You know, we're standing at a fork in the road every moment. Do I go this way or go this way? Oh, this one feels more right. Okay, I'm going over here. And so what I hear you're doing is you're developing skills that are going to last you an entire lifetime instead of putting yourself, quote unquote, at the mercy of somebody else to make those decisions for you.
Yeah. And one of the things I've also noticed is that I kind of tell my story. Well, my friends have found out about it and they're friends of friends. And I get asked sometimes, you know, well, how's it going? And it's always people are very, very interested to hear because I can tell that they're on the threshold themselves. Mm-hmm. And I found that so many people are so close to making these decisions. One of the things that I found is after doing it, I always planned for the worst and expected the worst, and I had answers ready to pull out of my back pocket when people, I envisioned them attacking me, like, why are you doing this? How are you so off the path of everything else? And it's not as bad as you might think. And so many people are more supportive. I've only really got a few people in my life that aren't supporting this decision that I'm making. And that was so refreshing. It was such a weight off my shoulders to find out, you know, my parents and my family and my brother are all, they're supporting me and they're almost living, I wouldn't say living vicariously, but I guess they're happy that I'm doing this at this point in my life because I think it's ultimately going to make me happier. And initially, I just didn't know what to expect. And so if there's anybody out there on the fringe of doing it, I'd really encourage them just to try it out, at least to dip your toe in the water.
The theme that I'm hearing here today is that because my mind is always kind of scanning, like, you know, the listener base, right? It could be anybody, and there could be people out there in situations that, you know, really feel disempowered, and that they're certain about they're disempowered. And but I keep picking apart these little themes here, and I'm, you know, it seems to apply. These are inherently human concepts that we're speaking of, about the nature of who we are and where we are in a relationship in any given time. And because we've all heard stories of amazing individuals that came from, you know, the direst circumstances, that something happened. They picked up a book. They had a conversation, and something made them think a little bit differently about themselves and who they were in that relationship with their boss or their parent or whoever it was, where they were in a disempowered circumstance. And just beginning to shift that thinking. That's why we always end this show with all change begins with you, because it's true. It is up to us. Even though we've got outside factors and outside influences and people and such that are very often controlling a lot of what we have before us to engage in, it's still really up to us whether or not we do. No matter, I mean, you could say, oh, well, yeah, but then they don't get paid. They don't get, well, yes, you're choosing to continue it, so you do get paid, so you do survive. That's a choice. Mm-hmm. Survival is a choice. Yeah. And if we can bring ourselves just back to the core nugget of that reality, we can somehow begin to climb our way back. This notion of helplessness has really been on my mind of late, because it just feels like so many, and we look across the country, and we did a whole show recently on politics, and why don't people believe that their guy is going to, oh, God, there's nothing we can do, nothing we can do, and we learn there's nothing we can do, and then we just lay down and we capitulate. We teach ourselves to be helpless. And the way out of that, harkening back to one of my favorite books, Learned Optimism by Martin Seligman, I'm giving you a whole book and a lot of theory in a nutshell, is that somehow something happens that we learn that we can have an impact, that what we say makes a difference. Whether it's in our mind or somehow we do something and we get a positive result that we feel good about it and we go, ah, wait a minute, that was an anomaly. I actually directed that. And just that can begin a whole new chasm of thought and behavior and just ways of being. So this is what we're talking about here today, about career change and seeking meaning and listening to yourself, listening to your own inner feeling of what moves you, what drives you. And it's twofold. It's one, that the heat is getting turned up and we're just being asked to tolerate or take it too much, and that's triggering us. And many more people around us are seeking meaning and things that are of value to them. And so we're getting a reference for like, oh, wait a minute, Ben is doing that. What does that mean to me? Let me think about that for a moment. Yeah. So hopefully people are listening in on the conversation today and thinking about their own lives and their own relationships. And certainly we've been talking about career transition and career change. This could be talking about really any change, any improvement in the quality of our lives and our personal experiences and what we as individuals bring to the table of life for ourselves and really for the co-creation that we have with everybody else, whether it's a team, family, organization, the world. Because I truly believe that the world needs you. Whoever's listening now, the world needs you to be who you are, to be contributing your best so that all of us can figure out how we're going to collectively learn how to thrive and be sustainable. Because when we do look around in our world today, I don't think anybody would disagree that there's a lot of wackiness going on and we need more of us to be engaged. So
I just want to add one more thing. That is, you know, I always say we think three ways. Well, four if you count the groin. But you got your head, you got your heart, you got your groin, and you got your gut. And men, generally, and men more than women, I think, are conditioned to think rationally and think with their heads. And I just want to say real quick that, by all means, trust your intuition. Trust your gut. It's never going to steer you wrong. And men have, I think, sometimes have a harder time doing that, maybe, than women. I don't know for sure, but I know that I had a difficult time trusting my intuition, and that's going to guide you to where you need to go. Quite often, your intuition will never steer you wrong.
I think that's so right. That is the message of work from within. That, you know, yes, your mind serves you, but put a hand on your heart and listen to your heart. Put a hand on your gut and listen to your gut. There's good research that actually shows that those are great decision making places. Sure, get the information for your head, but feed the decision with your heart and your gut. Lead it there.
Absolutely. I want to thank you all for being with me today. Dave Matthews, folks can hear more about you if they want to, at DaveMatthewsBluesBand.com. Ben Varvel. Ben is just seeking off his career change. I don't know if you want people to reach you or say hi if they want, but they can always contact you through me if they wish. They can hear this show at RealitySandwichRadio.com. And our career transition specialist, Susan Bernstein. Folks can get your information at WorkFromWithin.com and read more about you and what you do and classes. And
as well as my new website, the Job Search Gym, which is jobsearchgym.com, which is for people in job search change to support them also from the inside out. People who do know what they want, it's a great place for them and to transition, and people who are still trying to figure it out, finding out through workfromwithin.com.
Excellent.
And there's great resources on both.
Beautiful. Thanks, Susan, for being with us. We've been speaking about career transition. This is Reality Sandwich Radio. My name is Martin Matthews. I'm a clinical, medical, and hypnotherapist, and I'm losing my words because I'm rushing today. But you can hear this show and all past shows of Reality Sandwich at RealitySandwichRadio.com. Be sure to tune in next week. We'll be speaking with Daniel Pinchbeck, the author of 2012, The Return of Quetzalcoatl, and we'll be speaking about human evolution and reality. He's our namesake because he has the website realitysandwich.com in New York City. Thanks for tuning in.